Good morning to each one of you.
Good morning.
Lord's blessings to you all. It's good to be here this week, and especially a couple of the home youth. Good to see you all. It's always sort of special to have some good familiar faces, and I trust we'll get to know some of the rest of you as the week goes on by. I thought I should also introduce myself a little bit to you all. I have a wife and seven children, six boys and one girl. My oldest son is here with us today. And also, there's a Ruth Martin, which is here as well. She lives with us, and it's a blessing to have her here too. Just reflecting back over my life, obviously the Lord has done a lot in my life as I reflect back. He saved me quite a number of years ago when I was 15 years of age. I did grow up in a Christian home with godly parents that loved the Lord, and Brother Leonard was sharing how that it was his mother that was a praying mother. Well, my mother is also a godly mother, but I'm going to say that my father was a praying father in our home. It was my father who really had a burden for us children, and many were there were times where we'd stand together, and even though I did not have a close relationship with my parents, there was a respect there. And many were the times that we'd stand together, my father would share his heart with me, and then tears running down his cheeks. And I sensed the love in his heart toward me and toward us as children. And I'm very grateful for that. And I look back, it's not that many years ago that I was your age. I never did have the privilege of going to a Bible school as a young person. I never did have that privilege, but the Lord has blessed me with a wonderful wife and family, and it's a blessing. Which I wish they could be here to spend the week with us here, but they're not able to. And so you're missing half of me if you only see me. I'd like to just give you a little bit of an introduction. I will be speaking and sharing about the life of David this week. And as I've considered and looked at a lot of different aspects in David's life, there's basically four different areas that I would like to sort of hone in on. And if you want to write these down, I would like to this morning just write the title on the board for this morning. And this morning specifically is David's honor and respect toward his authorities. David's honor and respect toward his authorities. And I'd like to also maybe just mention the other specific topics that I'll be sharing here. I'd like to tomorrow speak about David and Goliath. On Wednesday, I'd like to share about steps leading to David's sin. And then Thursday, David's low road to perfection. But I'd like to also give you something to think about, and I'd like to mention it every day this week. There's something that really stands out in David's life, and that is David had the fear of God, and he had purpose and discipline. And I like to just mention that. David had the fear of God and purpose and discipline. David had the fear of God, purpose, and discipline. Okay. I'd like for us to just consider this area of honor and respect that David had toward his authorities. And I wasn't sure how to begin. There's so much in the life of David, and as you look closely and consider David's life, I can't even begin to share this week all that is in the life of David. But I'd like to just maybe start with a little overview. If you start reading closely David's life, there's different things that happen, and obviously a lot of it begins with the life of Saul. The children of Israel, they were asking for a king, and because they were asking, it wasn't God's perfect will, but God sort of gave in, and He allowed them to have a king. And so He appointed Saul. He had Samuel go and anoint Saul as king, and it was only 2 years after Saul was anointed king that God rejected him. Saul very clearly disobeyed God, and because of his disobedience to God, God looked at the situation and He said, I need a man who's after my own heart, and I'm going to pick someone else. And, in the lineage of the kings, usually, not always, but usually, there was a king, and then his son reigned in his stead, and then his son reigned in his stead. But because of Saul's sin, God pulled the kingdom away from King Saul, and He gave it to David. And it was because of what was in David's heart. But 2 years into Saul's reign is when David comes into the picture. When Saul was rejected from being king, God told Samuel, He said, I want you to go over to Jesse, and I want you to anoint one of his sons to be king. And Samuel, with much trembling, he said, what if Saul finds out that I anointed this man king? What if he finds out? But he said, I want you to go. And so he went over to Jesse, and he asked, and he made a sacrifice. And he told Jesse to bring his sons, and he said, I want to meet all of your sons. And he didn't tell him why. He said, I want to meet all of your sons. And so this was before they actually had the sacrifice. They were there, and one by one, his sons, Jesse's sons, came in front of Samuel, Samuel would ask God, is this the one? And God would say no. And then another one came, and in his heart he thought, surely this is the one, but it wasn't him. And actually twice after they were all through, God had said no. And so Samuel had him go through again, and God said no. Then he asked, do you have yet another son? And they say, yeah, I have another son out with the sheep. And he said, go get him. We won't eat and sacrifice before we have this mission complete. And he brought him in, and there he was. There was Jesse. And God said, anoint him. He's the one. And he got his oil out there in front of his brothers and his father, and he anointed him.
He did not tell him what the anointing was for, but he anointed him. The Bible does not say that he told him, "You're anointed king," but he anointed him. And I'm sure there was questions going on in their minds. What is David being anointed for? And after he was anointed, David went back out into the sheep fold and taking care of the sheep. And it was right after this time that, the Spirit of God had left Saul. And it says that there was an evil spirit from God came down and he troubled Saul. And Saul was going through some very troubling times and he was discouraged and troubled. And in the middle of this, he asked his servants, he said, "Can you find me a man who can come and play the harp and encourage me?" And it says that there was a man that said that, I know a young man who's a cunning player. And there's numerous things that it mentioned about David that we'll talk about later. But there's numerous things that were mentioned about him. And he said, he's a good man and he fears the Lord. And he said, I'll bring him. And so David comes and he was there before Saul and he played his harp. And you know what harp music is. It's nice, beautiful music. And as David was there, this was after he was anointed king. And there he was, in front of the king, playing to the king. And the Holy Ghost, the Spirit of God was on David. And as he was playing, the evil spirit would leave. And there was a rest in Saul's heart. And it says that Saul looked on David and he loved him. And he was blessed. And a short while later, Saul took his men and they went out to battle. And when they went out to battle, King David, that was anointed king, he went back to the sheepfold. He went back to the sheepfold again and he was again taking care of sheep because there was no need for him there in Saul's house to play anymore because they were gone. So David was out there taking care of the sheep. And it was about a month and a half that they were gone. And during this month and a half is when Goliath was out there and he was challenging the armies of Israel. And he was asking that a man would come and fight. And of course, Israel was in horrible fear in that month and a half. Horrible fear. And of course, Saul was trembling and all the armies were afraid. And there he was. And in the meanwhile, Jesse, David's father, told David, he said, "I want you to take some food and I want you to take it out there. And I want you to give it to your brethren and just inquire, see how things are going out there." And so David went. And David was out there. Obviously, when he came out there, there was Goliath. And earlier on, it had actually mentioned that David was a man, a mighty, valiant man, and also a man of war. And I don't know what age you're thinking that David really was at this time, but it calls him a youth. And if you look at what age bracket that really comes in, it would seem like David would have probably been around the age 20. How many 20-year-olds do we have here today? Okay. He would have probably been around the age 20. And you know everything that happened with David and Goliath. Goliath was killed and great victory and all the things that happened there. But on the heels of that, David comes back. And Saul comes to him and he says, "Whose son are you? Prior to this time, he didn't, even though he was singing for him, he didn't really know whose son he was. But he asked, "Whose son are you?" And he set him over all the men of war. David was set over all the men of war. And not only that, on the heels of that is when the ladies started singing. You know, David has killed his thousands, and or Saul has killed his thousands, and David his 10,000s. And that was the first time that Saul looked at David and he said, "What more can he have but the kingdom?" And it was right on the heels of that that he the first time cast his javelin at David. And of course, David escaped, and is right on right in the same time. It happened twice, and you know, serious things were happening, and you know, it seemed time went on, and Saul was out to get rid of David, and he had promised that David would be allowed to marry his daughter, and he gave the oldest one to someone else, but then he decided he's going to put a snare in there for David. And he said, "You can have my daughter Michal if you go out and kill 100 Philistines." This was not a time of war. But can you imagine just, you know, David going out there and killing 100 Philistines? And this pleased David. And of course, God was with him. And he went out and he killed 200 and brought him back. Saul's daughter Michal loved David. And it wasn't long after that that Saul came to the place where he was determined, "I will kill David." And when that happened, he had fled home to his house. And actually, Saul sent servants after him. And they told him, "In the morning when he comes out of that house, you get him and you kill him and bring him in here. I want him killed." But David knew that evil was determined, and he went out the window and was gone. And from that time forth, Saul was out to kill David. So as you look at this whole picture, here was David, a young man, possibly 20 years old. He had a tremendous love of God. And there's a lot of things that we'd like to talk about here as time goes on. But here was David, and he had a master that hated him. There was no respect from his master to him. He was an ungodly man. And there was this, David was looking at him, and the question was, how should David respond to this king? And he had been required to work for him for a time, but now he had fled for his life. And what was David's responsibility in the middle of all this? How should he treat his master? I'd like to just quickly look at a number of verses. Time is slipping away very quickly here. And I don't want to make this longer than I have to here, but turn with me. Turn with me to 1 Samuel chapter 17, and we'd like to look at a couple things that happened on the heels of this when David was fleeing for his life. You know, as years went on by, Saul was king for many years. Saul was king for quite a number of years. And yet God had rejected him, and God had told David that he is going to be the next king. Not only he's going to be, he had anointed him to be king. And so in light of all that, there's a lot of things that I'm sure David, as time was going on, he realized his responsibility. He realized his call from God. He knew that he was going to be the next king. And yet here he was. He was under a master. If God had chosen him to be the next king, should he kill him? Should he get rid of him? You know, what was David's response to all this? David actually, as time went on, he had two wives at this point, and there's 400 valiant men that were going with him, and there's different things that happened as the years had gone on by. But there was a day came when David was out there and Saul brought 1,000 men and he took the choice men of Israel and he came out and he went out with the sole purpose of destroying and killing David. Because David was an adversary that he knew would get to be the next king if he didn't get rid of him. And if he didn't get rid of him, his sons were in jeopardy. His sons wouldn't be king. And of course, he didn't know when the day would come when David would come and kill him as well. In 1 Samuel chapter 17. And we're just going to break in here. David was out there with his men. And there's a situation that happened. Actually, I'm going to back up a little bit. Let me back up a little bit. There's something that I'd like to come back to, something that happened with his father. And this was the time that he was called to go out to see for Goliath. You know, when Goliath was out there. But in verse 20 of chapter 17, this is what Jesse told, this is what was told to David. Verse 19, "Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines." And they actually weren't fighting, they were there waiting. And every morning, you know, the giant would come up and he'd threaten. Verse 20, "And David rose up early in the morning and left the sheep with a keeper and took and went as Jesse had commanded him." He went to the trench. His father Jesse had clearly instructed and commanded him to go out there. And guess what he did? He nicely went. Okay? And I wonder many times how it is. There was clear command and instruction given, and it says, he went. He nicely went. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of back and forth and arguing, and he went. Okay, let's read it again. It says, "And he took and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the trench." And then that's where he met Goliath. But he simply listened very nicely to the instruction that was given him. Okay, let's move on to 1 Samuel 24. 1 Samuel 24, verse, I think we'll just start reading in verse 1. And it says, "And it came to pass when Saul was returned from following the Philistines, that it was told him, saying, Behold, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi. Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men out of all Israel and went to seek David and his men upon the rocks of wild goats." And actually, about a week ago, I saw some pictures, and there's a man over there in En-Gedi, and these wild goats are still there. "And he came to the sheep coats by the way, where was a cave, and Saul went in to cover his feet. And David and his men remained in the sides of the cave. And the men of David said unto him, Behold, the day of which the Lord said unto thee, Behold, I will deliver thine enemy into thine hand, that thou mayest do to him as it seem good unto thee. Then David arose and cut off the skirt of Saul's robe privately. And it came to pass afterward that David's heart smote him because he had cut off Saul's skirt. And he said unto his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing unto the Lord's anointed, to stretch forth mine hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord. So David stayed his servants with these words and suffered them not to rise against Saul. But Saul rose up out of the cave and went his way. Consider with me, here's David. He was anointed by God to be the next king. God had rejected Saul from being king. God had said, Saul, you're no longer going to be king. And he had anointed David to be king. Here was Saul, king of Israel, a very angry, evil man that had an evil spirit come and torment him. And Saul was continually trying to seek David's life. Many times he had tried to kill him. And now he was actually coming out with 3,000 men and trying to kill him. And David was fleeing for his life. Not only that, David, in his journeys, he had stopped in at the priests. You know, there was a village of priests. And after he had stopped in there, because he was hungry. And it was when he was first fleeing his life. And they had given him a sword and they'd given him some food. And after a while, Saul found out about it. And Saul went out there and he went to the priests and he killed every one of them, their wives, their children, their animals, every one of them excepting one escaped. This is Saul. And now here's David. Now he's coming after his life. And here David's in a cave, hiding. And Saul comes in. And I don't know what all it means by he covered his feet. I don't know what all that means. But it's very clear that in this cave, David and his men had the opportunity to kill their master Saul. They had perfect opportunity. And if you look at all the things that were stacked against David, and here, there's his opportunity. Not only that, his servants were saying, David, here's your chance, and it's God that has given you this opportunity to go and kill. And you know how it is when we face things that really feel like it's the right thing to do, our flesh, everything is stacked in that direction, and then we get encouragement and men and women come and say, do it, do it. And David said, no. David said, no. David rose up and he said, no, I cannot do this. He said this. He said, Saul, he's anointed by God. Was he anointed by God? He was. But look, Saul was after David's life. He's been trying to kill him for years and he had done all this evil and he had walked away from God and God had rejected him. And here he was trying to get David. And David looks at him and says, this man is my authority. He has been anointed by God, and he said, he's my master. How can I do this great evil? Wow. I wonder how I would have responded. I really wonder. The Lord forbid that I should do this unto my master, seeing he is the Lord's anointed. And you know what he did? Rather than killing him, he went and he took and cut a corner of his garment off. And I don't know if he had laid it aside and was sleeping. I'm not sure what was going on. But it says that he had gone in to cover his feet. And there he had an opportunity to, with one one swing of his knife or whatever he had there to get rid of him. Actually, I don't think they had knives. Because at this point, there's earlier on it says that only, or later on it says that only Saul and Jonathan were the only ones that had a sword and a shield. And the rest of them must have had some kind of a stone weapon. But here he was, and he could have with one swat, he could have killed him. But there was a respect. There was something in David's heart that he knew that God had anointed him. And at this point, even though God had rejected him, there was an authority in his life that he was looking at and saying, "This is my authority. And God has placed this man into my life. And it feels like everything's going wrong. He's trying to get me. But this man, I'm going to respect. And if God wants to deal with him, let him deal with him." Okay? And when he cut off that corner of his garment, his own heart smote him. Do you see that respect that he had towards Saul? He cut off the corner of his garment, and his heart smote him. He says that his heart smote him. Well, what's wrong with cutting off the corner of his garment? Well, later on it says that he got his spear and his water jug and some of those things, and his heart didn't smite him with that. But here he was coming to a place where he was getting really close to Saul personally, on a personal level. And what he did there smote his heart. He smote his heart. And he realized, this man is an authority in my life, and I need to have a respect for this man. Okay. Let's quickly turn over to chapter 26. Anyhow, I won't go into detail here of what happened right after this, but there was a second time when Saul again came out. Evil men came and had stirred up Saul, and Saul again came out. And if you look at chapter 24, or 26, sorry about that. 26, I think we'll start reading. I think we'll just start reading in verse 5. "And David arose and came to the place where Saul had pitched. And David beheld the place where Saul lay, and Abner the son of Ner, and the captain of his host. And Saul lay in the trench, and the people pitched round about him. Then answered David and said to Ahimelech the Hittite, and Abishai the son of Zeruiah, the brother of Joab, saying, 'Who shall go down with me to Saul to the camp?' And Abishai said, 'I will go down with thee.' So David and Abishai came to the people by night, and behold, Saul lay sleeping within the trench, and his spear stuck in the ground at his bolster. But Abner and the people lay round about him. Then said Abishai to David, 'God hath delivered thine enemy and into thine hand this day. Now therefore let me smite him, I pray thee, with a spear even to the ground at once, and I will not smite him the second time.' And David said unto Abishai, 'Destroy him not. For who can stretch forth his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless?' David said, furthermore, 'As the Lord liveth, the Lord shall smite him, or his day shall come to die, or he shall descend into battle and perish. The Lord forbid that I stretch forth my hand against the Lord's anointed. But I pray thee, take thou now the spear that is in the bolster and the cruse of water, and let us go.' David took the spear and the cruse of water from Saul's bolster, and they gat them away, and no man saw it, nor knew it, nor awaked, for they were all asleep, because a deep sleep from the Lord was fallen upon them." The second time you think, if it happens again, surely this is the Lord opening the door. But here he is, and he's saying, I will not. He said, God will bring, if this is, you know, God will take care of Saul. He said, there's a day coming when he's going to perish in battle, or he'll die of old age, or something will happen. And that is God's responsibility. It is not my responsibility to judge my authority. And David called him, my Lord the King. He called him, my Lord the King. Now, some years later, when Saul and Jonathan were killed in battle, a messenger came to David and he said, oh, I've got good news for you. He said, I killed Saul. He said, I came on him and he was in distress and he was still alive. And he said, Saul asked me to kill him. And he said, I killed him. You know what David's response was? David's response was, oh, you think you did me a favor, but you killed the Lord's anointed. How can you do that and be guiltless? And he had this man killed because he went and he killed the Lord's anointed. And later on, when he heard who the men were that went buried Saul and Jonathan, he sent messengers to them and he blessed them. He said, blessed be ye of the Lord that showed you this kindness unto the Lord and unto Saul and have buried him. And he blessed them. And when he found out that Saul was dead, he mourned all that day and didn't let anyone eat. And he mourned and he wept because of Saul. And I'd like for us to just consider this morning that we're living in a day and age when there's very, very little respect for any authority. And I'm not just talking about youth toward parents, but consider with me just general run society and their respect for the president. Normal respect toward our police officers. Normal respect for men on the job toward their supervisors. You can go on and on. There's very little respect in today's society for any authority. Am I right? Very little respect. And I'd like for us to just consider that all of us here, you know, it's like Brother Leonard was sharing, these weeks or this time that we're spending here and this time that you have as youth, you are in a moldable age where a lot of your life is possibly in front of you. Anytime, you know, he had this little line there, you know, all of us could die anytime. But there's a good possibility that most of our life is still in front of us. And if that's the case, I'd like for us to just consider that this issue of honor and respect toward authority is majorly disregarded in our nation. In a major way. There's some from our fellowship that have been working with the Nepal people. On the outside, there is a lot more respect toward authorities and older people. It might not all be on the inside, and I grant you that. But anyone that is older, they won't even call them by their first name. They'll call them uncle, and they'll call them aunt. And many times, they don't even know their first names because they are to treat them with respect and honor. Very, very different than what we have in America today. Today in America, Men, young men, they look at older men and women with disgust. They're stupid. They're idiots. They're behind the times. You know what I'm talking about? It's out there. Youth in our society today are largely rebellious and selfish and proud. Rebellious, selfish, and proud. Many of you think that their parents are old-fashioned and behind, they're just not quite up to snuff. I've had some of those thoughts myself when I was young. And it seems like there's something about youth, and I haven't figured out everything about it, but it seems like there's something in youth. There's a lot of energy and vigor and learning ability and a lot of those things, and there are things that younger ones do learn. I look at my children, and some of their abilities are beyond mine. I don't consider myself to just be ignorant on the computer, but neither am I computer savvy. And there's some of those things that, my sons have gone beyond me already, But just consider with me that God has placed in all of our lives authorities. Different authorities. And I'd like for us to just consider, I'd like to define some of the authorities that God has placed into your lives. I'd like to just define some of those. Have us consider that God has given, it doesn't matter who it is, I'm to be under authority. And I'm not here to just preach to you all. But all of us, every last one of us, God has placed certain authorities in our life. And I look at a lot of these struggles that go on the workplace and a lot of the problems in society, and I look at a lot of even the struggles in church, and I look at the struggles in homes, and I like to just bring a lot of these things back and just say, a lot of it has to do that there's not a proper honor and respect toward our authorities. I'm not saying everything. And I want to be careful. And yet I look at it and I say, if there was a proper honor and respect there, a lot of problems would become small and very workable. Okay. Just defining a couple of our authorities. We are, or maybe I should ask the question, how many of you are under Obama's rule? All of us, right? Okay. I believe that we should give due respect and honor to our President Obama. And it grieves me when I hear comments made in a derogatory way about Obama. Now, I believe Obama is a very ungodly man, and a lot of the things that he's done are not right. And it grieves me because it's taking society on a downhill trend. But I like to say, we need a proper honor and respect for our president. We need a proper honor and respect toward our local police and sheriff's departments. And God forbid that we should be viewing them negatively. And if we do, we have a problem in our hearts. We do. And with the ages that you have, there's possibly different ones that have, are working, and you have, people you work for, supervisors or whoever it might be. They are an authority that God has placed over you. You know, Pilate, I'm not using a whole lot of other scriptures here this morning, but Pilate, when Jesus was before Pilate, Pilate made the statement. He said, "Don't you know that I'd have the ability to have you killed? And, you know, whatever I say happens." And Jesus said, "Well, you know, whatever authority you have has been given to you from above." And God places authorities into our lives. Our parents are an authority. Church leaders are an authority. Now, I'd like to just consider quickly a couple practical ways that we can honor and respect our authorities. If we get this one right, a lot of other things will become minimal problems. You know, there's a lot of other glitches that we face, and they're real issues and real problems. But I'd like to just encourage you, honor and respecting our authorities is a big issue. It's a big issue. Many walk away from this principle. Honor and respect goes way beyond obedience. Honor and respect is way beyond just simple obedience. You know, we expect, I don't think anyone in here would throw away that I'm to obey my dad and my mom, or I'm to obey my supervisor or whoever it might be. But honor and respect goes way beyond that. What is honor and respect? Honor and respect is looking at what that authority is desiring of us and complying to it cheerfully, if I may say it that way. You know, I just the other evening, you know, before we left, I was sitting on the couch with my wife, and I wanted to spend a little time with her there. And, you know, it was sort of special. We were there just a couple minutes before we were leaving, and my youngest son comes and says, "Hey, Mama, I need to go to the restroom." And guess what? One of my children pipes up and says, you know, he looked over and he saw what was going on with my wife and I. Guess what he did? He said, "Hey, I'll take him." I sat there and I was blessed. You know, if I would have asked him to do that, I would have expected him, you know, that he would have done it. But honor and respect is if we look at the desires and the wishes of our authorities, and we give ourselves to that with gladness of heart. That's honoring. That's respecting. It's lifting up our authorities, our, you know, whether it's on the job or in the home or where it might be. It's lifting them up and respecting their desires, and, you know, it's a heart condition. It's way beyond just simply obeying. Obedience is expected. But honoring and respecting our authorities for who they are. Your authorities won't always do what is right. They'll fail. I fail. I'm not a perfect employer. I'm not a perfect dad. I'm not a perfect leader in the church. Now, I desire to be, and I give it all I have. But there's something about honoring and respecting that we look at the desires and wishes of our superiors and we give ourselves to that. That's honoring and respecting. It's not only obedience. And obviously, I'd like to just clarify, whether it's a government or even if it might be your parents. If you have parents that are ungodly, look at what David did. There was an honor and respect there. There was a clear reverence and an honor for him, from David to Saul, very clearly. No question. And yet, there are situations, and you might find yourself, that you're asked to do something that is against Scripture. I'm not indicating or advocating that you go against Scripture. But what I'm saying is, there are many, 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 many situations that you will find. And if you exercise yourself in finding out what your mother or your father or your church leader or your supervisor at work or whoever it might be, what are they really wanting of me? And you look at that and you try to comply to that and you give yourself to that. There will be things that are that will happen in your life and doors that will open in spiritual growth that you never realized. God will open doors and the grace of God will come down into your life. Because it's God's will. God said in Ephesians chapter 4, children, obey your parents. Honor your father and mother. Don't talk behind your authority's back. Show high respect, even if you don't always agree. Now, here's something that I'd like to just clarify. Sometimes we think that honoring and respecting means that I need to agree with everything that is said and done. But that's not the case. That's not the case. God has made you as an individual, and you might see things through a little bit different light at times. And God is not expecting that you look at every situation that's done by whatever authority that you might have and just agree with everything. But there's a desire to give yourself and obey in whatever area you can. If you even disagree, you can still do and comply and bless and honor in the middle of that. You can do that even when you don't agree. And I know that there's many times that people don't agree with me. But all the blessing to just opening of heart and sharing, and you know, whether it's sharing from my sons or where it might be, where there's an openness to just dialogue and a just giving and a yielding, and that honor and respect is there without a question. In King David, there was no question that he had honor and respect for his father or the king. No question. Is there? No question. It was clear. People didn't look on and say, well, did he really honor Saul did he really have respect for him? It says that when Saul died and David mourned and he called a fast, that the people looked on and they knew that it was not Saul's, or it was not David's wishes. They knew that. Giving yourself in honoring and respecting, so that there's no question, whether it's from your parents or wherever it might be. I'll tell you, young people, if this is one that you can latch a hold of, it will take you a long way in your lifetime. If you don't get a hold of this and you become married, you'll have marriage problems. And if you don't get a hold of this and you have children, you'll have issues with your children. And Brother Leonard was talking about how this cycle has been going on for years and years. You know, this clash between children and parents is clashing. And like Brother Leonard said, somewhere it has to stop. And if you find yourself in this area where you don't have this, or there's a lack of it, I'd like to just encourage you. Seek God. Talk to your parents about it. Open yourself. Do you think that the knowledge that you will gain over the next 20 years... Maybe I should just ask this first. How many of you think that you're going to gain more knowledge over the next 20 years? Would you raise your hand? Okay. How many of you think
that the knowledge that your dad gained over the last 20 years, that you'll gain more knowledge than what he's gained in that span. How many of you think that you'll gain more than what he's gained in the last 20 years? You know, we like to think that if we're 20 or if we're 20 or 25 years younger than Dad, that I have almost as much wisdom as Dad has. We like to think that way. But I'd like to assure you that when I was young, I had some of those same thoughts, and today I don't think that way anymore. And the sooner that you can figure that one out, the better you are. Okay? The sooner that you can figure out that, you know, you're not quite as smart as what you think you are, and you can give yourself and learn from your father and mother in these areas, the better you are, the better off you are. So I'd like to just come back to David had the fear of God without a question. And in the last message, I'd like to really elaborate on that. He had the fear of God, he had purpose, and he had discipline. David had honor and respect toward his authorities, toward King Saul and his father, in a way that no one questioned. When they looked at David's life, they knew that he had respect. They knew he had honor without a question. And if someone looks at your life today, is there a question in people's minds about how much you honor and respect your authorities? God bless you.